museum, there are a lot of speech protections and artistic freedom protections that have to come with it. And that's part of the problem when you start muzzling the voices of those who start making inquiries into conditions in the country.
But do you think that given these conditions, either NYU or the cultural institutions, Guggenheim, the Louvre, etc., that are all on the Saadiyat Island, mm-hmm. whether they should be established there, given what workers are subjected to?
Well, the train already left the station on that. The decision was made. They're building the buildings, but they have a lot of responsibilities going in. The question is, have their voices, have the directors and the presidents of these institutions, have their voices been bought and paid for as well? Because so far, the president of NYU has had nothing to say about the recent incidents.
Well, Andrew Ross, I want to thank you so much for being with us, sociology professor at New York University and president of NYU's chapter of the American Association of University Professors, recently barred from entering the United Arab Emirates after he criticized the monarchy's exploitation of migrant workers. And that does it for our show. Our condolences to our director, Becca Staley. Her brother-in-law, U.S. Army Captain John Wynkoop, was killed in a training accident at Fort Bliss in Texas. He was 27 years old, leaves behind his wife, Rachel, and their three children, Graham 4, Leah 3, and Jacob almost 11 months. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Shaikh.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with our host, Joanne Hardesty. Today's guest is Jean DeMaster, Executive Director of Human Solutions, and we'll talk about shelter for homeless people. Plus, we'll get a legislative update.
We're at the Erez Crossing, which is where you enter Gaza from. So apparently, when you go into Gaza, you have to walk until you get to the first town there. And apparently that walk is very dangerous.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of Indigenous Rights, Palestine, and Academic Freedom. Thursday, April 9th at 6:30 p.m. at Portland State University's Smith Center, room 338. Guest speaker will be Stephen Saleta, former Virginia Tech professor. That's Indigenous Rights, Palestine, and Academic Freedom, sponsored by Students United for Palestinian Equal Rights, on Thursday, April 9th, 6:30 p.m. at Portland State University, Smith Center, room 338. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO and the Clinton Street Theater are proud to present a music documentary that raises the bar for the genre. Arrows into Infinity, the new documentary about the life of jazz musician Charles Lloyd. Thursday, April 9 at the Clinton Street Theater. Arrows into Infinity takes us on Lloyd's journey from the heights of jazz rock royalty to his life in seclusion and back again. Arrows into Infinity, the Portland premiere. Thursday, April 9, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. 2522 Southeast Clinton, Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is proud to present a live broadcast of the Inner City Blues Festival, a benefit for Healthcare for All Oregon, from the North Portland Eagles Lodge, 7611 North Exeter at North Lombard in Portland. Saturday, April 11th from 6 p.m. to midnight, hear live performances from such local blues and R&B luminaries as LaRonda Steele, Norman Sylvester Band, and many more. Again, that's the Inner City Blues Festival live broadcast and show on Saturday, April 11th from 6 p.m. to midnight. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Get up, stand up. Good morning, good morning. Welcome to Voices from the Edge. I am Joanne Hardesty, and it's my pleasure to be here with you today. So have you been checking out and following the legislative process? Man, there's a lot of bills, a lot of legislative hearings. And for regular people who work or go to school, it's kind of hard to keep up with what's happening in Salem. But there's a few bills I want to bring to your attention. One, I want to bring to your attention because it's kind of frightening to see what's going on with this particular bill. And so there was a hearing this week on House Bill 2571. And House Bill 2571 is related to video cameras. So, you know, we've got City of Portland Police Bureau can't wait to spend $880,000 to go out and buy cameras. But they have some problems. The big problem is who has access to the video. And our mayor and police were in Salem this week testifying in favor of House Bill 2571. But what the measure would do is basically leave it to law enforcement to decide when the cameras would be on or off. In fact, they say that it would be related to they say that police would determine in the course of their duties when the cameras would be basically on. And so once again, if this becomes law and if this becomes the kind of statewide standard, the goal that most people have, which is if there's going to be cameras, which no one other than police want, if there's going to be cameras, then the police should not be the ones collecting the data from the cameras. Who is the entity that gets to collect the data? Who has access to the data? And so what Portland Police would like the legislature to do is give them the authority to actually develop a system where the public would not have access to the cameras, only the police would have access to the information, and the police would determine when the cameras would be on, when they would be off, and when the public would have access to that information. I think this is a bad, bad precedent. And if this bill passes out of the legislative session, I already know that the mayor and Portland police are on this campaign to convince the general public that body cameras are going to fix what's broken. What's going to fix what's broken is political leadership to fire bad police officers. That's what's going to fix it. Spending $1 million to buy cameras and a couple of $1 million a year to monitor the data from the cameras and then giving all that information to the police and having them use their judgment to determine what the public sees is not in the public's interest. And so House Bill 2571 has not been scheduled for a work session, but I think the House Judiciary Committee really needs to hear from the public about why this legislation is just the opposite of what we need. What we need is legislation that says if the cameras are installed, that there's an independent entity that would collect, monitor, review the data, and then decide where to send that data. Whether that data goes to training, to retrain police officers who clearly may need some retraining, whether it goes to the DA for prosecution, whether it goes to a community member to support them in their suit against Portland Police. That would be the most appropriate facilitation of the data that's collected by these cameras, not having the police be the arbitrator of who gets access, how they get access. This is absolutely really, really bad legislation. And I got to say, because we have cops on both judiciary committees in Salem, chairing both judiciary committees in Salem, I'm very concerned that police are being able to just kind of rumrod whatever they want through the legislative process. But of course, they still have to get 31 votes in the House and 16 votes in the Senate. And I'm not sure that I hope that people are paying attention enough that they will not just pass this because the mayor wants it. And again, that's House Bill 2571. I also had the pleasure of being in Salem this week to testify on a end profiling bill that was submitted by the Center for Intercultural Organizing. And the end profile bill, House Bill 2002 now, they combined four bills into one legislative proposal. And the ending profiling bill basically would do several things. It would authorize the Attorney General to collect citizen complaints of police misconduct from around the state. It would prohibit law enforcement from stopping, searching, or questioning persons of color, homeless people, LGBTQ people without reasonable proof of or a reasonable proof or reasonable suspicion that they're involved in criminal behavior. It would also track law enforcement's data on stops. So who gets stopped, who gets questioned, who gets searched. And it would record the ethnicity of the individuals that are involved in those processes. Organization that's leading this effort, again, is the Center for Intercultural Organizing. There was a huge crowd in Salem this week to testify and to come and show support of this legislation. So hopefully that legislation is moving forward. There's also a bill, Senate Bill 894, which is a comprehensive women's health bill, which should be heard in its Senate Health Care Committee. So far, that bill has not been scheduled for a hearing. This bill actually would protect the reproductive health of women in Oregon and would expand health access. For example, it would extend birth control from 30 days to a year. You'd be able to get a year's supply with this particular legislation. This is a wonderful, wonderful bill that I also went and met with legislators about in Salem, and we talked about this bill. But this bill needs a hearing, and what we know is that anything that hasn't had a first hearing by mid-April is pretty much dead in the water. And so it's my hope that people will put some pressure on their legislators, especially our so-called progressive pro-choice legislative body, to address the issues in Senate Bill 894. And so hopefully that bill will be moving forward. Do you have bills that you are following this legislative session? If so, you might want to give me a call and let me know. What bills are you keeping your eyes on? The number to call is 503-231-8187. If I sound like I'm talking through a frog, it's because I have a slight cold, and so hopefully you can hear me okay. There was another legislative hearing this week on Ban the Box, which is House Bill 3025. What Ban the Box would do would be to remove questions about criminal history from job applications to ease the burden of returning people from our correctional institutions of being able to get a foot in the door with an employer. What we know from data is that if you check the box on an employment application, the chances of you getting a call back are pretty nil. But if the employer only asks that question after they want to offer you a job, then you have a better opportunity to explain what your background is. And then the employer has more facts to be able to figure out whether or not your criminal background should prevent you from being offered the employment opportunity. This bill, I think, has a lot of misperceptions about it. But it is my hope that this bill, in fact, will make it through the legislative session. I believe that the city council I'm not sure if the Portland City Council has actually voted on it yet. They've had two hearings on this bill, but I don't believe they've actually taken a vote yet. But someone can call and tell me if that is so. Again, the number to call is 503-231-8187. These are some of the bills that I've been watching as the legislative session moves forward. There's also a paid sick leave bill. There are two bills, one in the House and one in the Senate. House Bill 2005 and Senate Bill 454. These will create statewide standards that allow all Oregonians to earn sick time while working. And it also would ensure that working Oregonians have paid sick time means being able to reduce the spread of illness, of course, and then allowing people to have better access to their health care services. And so I will get back to House Bill 2571 because I want to tell you a couple of things about that bill that I find very troubling. But I'm going to go to the phone line. Hello, Joanne. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Yes, Joanne. I just want to say hello and thank you for your work. And I guess that's all. I have nothing important to say right now, but thank you for your work.
Well, thank
and
you.
I can hear you great.
Oh, thank well, you. Good. Right. Thank you so much. I appreciate the love. Some days you need love more than others. So House Bill 2571, there's a problem with transparency in this bill because it says that the use of the cameras would be confined to when an officer engages in law enforcement action. I think anytime a police officer puts on their uniform and is on their shift, so it's the entire shift, what time during the shift is a police officer not involved in law enforcement action? The other thing that I'm concerned about is privacy. The law must balance accountability and transparency with the critical preservation of citizen privacy. And given what we know about what's already happening with driver's license scanners, I'm concerned about just really what does this mean? What we know is that with technology that police currently have, I mean, my fear is that they will have cameras that will have facial recognition software. So you'll have a police officer walk up to you and they'll know everything about you before they ask for your driver's license or ID. The fact that we know that we have an accountability system that is dysfunctional in the city of Portland means that using our current system, as the Department of Justice said, is a self-defeating accountability system. And so clearly cameras are going to do nothing to fix our broken accountability system, our self-defeating accountability system. And in fact, the study that everybody quotes around body cameras, the Rialto Taser study, remember, it was paid for by Taser, which wants to sell cameras to police departments all over the country, like they did tasers all over the country. Even in their own report, they were able to expose what happens when a level of certainty of apprehension for professional misconduct was set at 100%, which means if police officers know that there's an immediate sanction, so you turn the camera off, you get fired, period, then police behavior changes, giving police the option of deciding when and where or if to turn their cameras on absolutely defeats the purpose of holding police accountable. So again, if we're going to spend this kind of money and what our hope is that police are going to act better, then why don't we just fire bad police officers? I mean, it's a really, really simple solution to a very complex problem. The problem is police are not following the Constitution. The problem is we have police who target various members of the community for enhanced policing. The problem is that we can't trust what police say happened at a traffic stop. If you remember what happened to the young man in North Portland at Roosevelt High School, that young man could be in jail serving a mandatory minimum because the police narrative said that he was attempting to choke a police officer. Luckily, the judge did not agree. The judge looked at the community videotapes and ruled that this young man was not guilty of attempted murder of a police officer. Can you imagine what would have happened if that case had turned out another way? Can you imagine what would have happened had community members not been taping the police that night? If the community had not been taping the police, that video would have never made it to the court. That judge would have never been able to make that decision because the only information she would have had was officers' words against a 17-year-old child from the community. And so Who would she have believed had she not had that videotape? That's the problem. And what that shows is it's not when police have cameras that police act differently. It's when the community has cameras and they have them trained on the police that we get a different result than we would get if the community didn't have cameras. Now, if we were going to take $1 million and put a camera in the hand of every community member, I'd say, yeah, that's a great policy. How do I get behind that? Because that's what's going to change police behavior when the community watches the police, not vice versa. Because remember, police cameras only watch the community. They don't watch the behavior or the actions of the police officer. And so it is my hope that that measure, House Bill 2571, does not make it out of the legislative session. I think Mayor Hales is putting a lot of faith in that getting out of the legislative body, and then they're going to try once again to sell us the cameras. And so let me tell you the marketing job that's taking place. So the police chief has sent out all kind of information asking the public for input around cameras. But what's interesting is the questions that they're asking the public aren't the questions that the public is concerned about. And they're trying to make it sound like if we have cameras, then rape victims might be subject to being recorded, that people's internal households might be subject to being recorded, that all of a sudden all this info may show up on the evening news. What they're not telling you is that what the public wants is for the police to not abuse people in our community. What the public wants, if the public wants cameras, they want it because they believe it's going to stop police abuse, not because they think that cops should have discretion about when or if to turn their camera on. We already know from Portland Police Bureau data that when police have discretion, the level of stops increase dramatically, and they increase in communities of color and in houseless communities. And so if you look at Portland's police own data on its own website and then look at what happens when police work the gang task force, and what you would see is that 44% of the stops are of African American people. Now, if you think about a population that's 7% of the general population in the city of Portland, you'd have to stop a lot of African Americans to make them 44% of your total stops. And you'd have to ask, why is that? That means you must be stopping every African American that's 24 years old and older in order to get to that high rate of 44%. In fact, just recently, Portland Police use of force data was released again. And what that shows is that if you're African American, you are 3 times as likely to have a gun pulled on you than if you are not an African American. If you're a white Oregonian, the chance of you having a gun pulled on you is pretty slim. If you're an African American, the numbers go up radically. I also want to share with you that this evening, the Community Oversight Advisory Board, you may remember, was put in place because of the Department of Justice settlement agreement, is having their first community town hall this evening. And that will take place at the Charles Jordan Community Center, located at 9009 North Foss, F-O-S-S, in North Portland. It's the Charles Jordan Community Center. That meeting will start at 5:30. And conclude at 8:30. Now, supposedly, this is a meeting that's a town hall so that the Community Oversight Advisory Board can hear directly from you. However, from looking at the agenda, which someone sent me, it looks like 1 hour will be taking up with the police actually talking. So that's one of the 3 hours taken up with that. The other thing is that they've developed a list of questions that came directly out of the police bureau. So why? And so if you're a community member who are coming in because you actually want to give information that you think is valuable to this community town hall, then you would show up And then you'd have to sit and wait for the police to talk for an hour. Then you'd have to sit and wait for them to go through this list of questions that the police would like to have answers to. And I think that that's going to be totally disrespectful to the public. Supposedly, this town hall is to get the public's input on their community engagement and outreach plan. But in my view, if you're going to request the public give you input, the plan should have been out so that the community could review it before the town hall. And so you're going to come tonight with some PowerPoint presentation, present it to the public, and pretend somehow that you've got the community's buy-off on your community engagement and outreach plan. I hope the community does show up in force. I hope the community owns their town hall meeting. And I hope that they make the cops sit and listen to the community talk rather than vice versa. We have another caller on the line. Good. I'm sorry, we don't. Sue, give us a call back. The number to call is 503-231-8187. So as you can see, I always get a little, just a little crazed when it comes to legislation that has unintended consequences. And actually, in this case, when I talk about the bill in front of the legislature, House Bill 2571, I think the bill does just what our mayor and our police chief wants the bill to do, which is to cut off the public's access to information that would be obtained if, in fact, we had body cams. Now, I don't understand this. If we're the public who's going to pay $1 million for body cams, we're going to pay for, the chief has already asked for three data analysts for body cams in his budget, his upcoming budget, even though we haven't authorized the expenditure of money for body cams, somehow we're going to have three staff people working on data in the police bureau. Now, any reasonable person would think if you're going to do some kind of analysis, maybe the auditor's office would be a really good place to actually have the data collected and analyzed. After all, the auditor, that's what they do for a living, is actually audit information and then make it accessible to the public. The fact that we're trying to be that the mayor and the police department are trying to sell us on, let us buy cameras, but let us control all the data and all the information, and we'll tell you what you need to know from what we see on the film. It's just totally not acceptable. And so give us a call. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. What are the legislative bills that you're tracking? Are there some that are gaining steam? Are there some that we should be paying attention to that I have not talked about this morning? I know that there are a lot of bills. I know every session, 3,000 bills are introduced. At least 2,000 of them make it through the House and Senate and become law. And most of us have no clue what the details of those bills are. So give me a call at 503-231-8187 and let's discuss what are your legislative priorities. I got to tell you, the more I think about these body cams, I just can't believe that Oregonians will be naive enough to fall for a pretend fix when we know we have worked so long to get to a place where someone is paying attention and holding police accountable for egregious behavior. So we finally have what appears to be a community oversight body, but even that body is a consultant from Chicago is trying to contain them and have them not take ownership of these issues. So I'm going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Anthony. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a suggestion for the funding of these cameras. I believe that they should simply take and reallocate the money that the police department has been spending on military weapons and use that for the cameras. I believe that's the way it should be. The public should not have to pay an additional tax to supply the police with cameras when they are using money on military weapons against us. The money should just be taken from the military weapons budget and put into the budget for the cameras.
Well, as you know, that's all taxpayer money.
Well, I know it's all taxpayer
it's
money.
It's all our money. So, I just don't even see. I see it as a pretend fix. Buying cameras pretends that you've actually addressed the issue of holding police accountable. And without legislation that actually says if you turn it off, you're fired, period. That's the only thing that's ever worked in actually holding police accountable for the body cameras. And there's nowhere in this legislation are we saying that that's the standard. So for me, that's the problem. I don't think taking it from one pot or another pot, right? I agree. We shouldn't be buying military weapons and using them against peaceful protesters. But having said that, all of it is our taxpayer money, whether it's federal money or whether it's state money. It's still money that comes from taxpayers. And we as taxpayers should not fall for this this scheme of spending $880,000 to buy body cams as a pretend fix to police misconduct.
Yeah. So I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, so that's kind of my thing. Is there anything you're watching in Salem this session?
No, unfortunately, I haven't been. Mm-hmm. I should be, but I haven't been.
Well, I understand. Most of us, you know, are just trying to get through our day-to-day, but every once in a while, you got to watch what those 90 people are doing in Salem, because it has an impact on our life.
Yes, that's true. I'll try to do that.
Well, thank you so much. You know, you can all do it all electronically now. You don't actually really even have to see them. If you don't want to, have a great day. Thank you for your call.
Bye
now. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Hello, Theodore. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hey, you're doing good work. I like it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. What's your thoughts on body cams?
Well, my thoughts are that when I started hearing that they were seeing 85% drops in crime rates with officers in other jurisdictions when they were using body cameras, right?
Right.
So that's good for the taxpayer right there, and it's good for justice.
Well, but let me tell you about the study, right? It's the Rialto study that claims, the Rialto study says that complaints dropped by 50%. The piece that people don't normally tell you is that there were 47 police officers on that force, and complaints went from 8 to 4. And it was a study done by Taser.
So not super significant.
So not super significant, and not comparing apples to apples. If we had a 47-person police force versus a 1,000-person police force, that might be relevant. But I was at the city council when they tried to sell this to the city council. Oh, we're just going to go out and look and see what we can buy for $880,000. Except the police department tried to slip a request for proposal past the city council. I had to stop it. I said, well, in the real world, we actually don't send a request for proposals until you're getting ready to buy something, right?
But can I make my point, though?
Please, please.
The point is that if let's say there's only a 50% drop, that is still money that's not going to be spent in the jail system and the justice system. See, I don't trust the police, and I don't trust them to handle the footage. And they will cover up, and they will destroy. And, you know, if they're extorting somebody or falsely beating them up. There was a case that Kefouri had. They totally falsified a report and beat the hell out of a guy.
Right.
And there was a camera in the parking lot.
Yes.
My point being, though, this is an excellent investment if the cops aren't the first ones, if they're not going to be able to turn it off, and if they're not going to control the footage.
Footage
should go to an independent agency
that
holds it in trust, and then through the court system, or if you want to make a Freedom of Information Act deal and you were a party or something, then you can get a copy of the footage. But my point is, it's cheap. It lessens the cost for the taxpayer. You're going to get probably a tenfold or 20-fold return on your $800,000 spent because people won't be incarcerated. They won't have trumped up charges. Does this make sense?
No, it doesn't. Because, I mean, if the proposal that you present, an independent entity collects the data, does the analysis, distributes it as appropriate, the scenario you laid out would be the only conditions where I would accept body cams.
Well, okay, so you agree.
However, you agree, yeah. That is not the proposal in front of the legislative body. That is not the proposal that the mayor is trying to ram down our throat. That is not the proposal that the police chief has sent out questionnaires to the community asking them to weigh
and
in on.
Do you want to know why?
Well, I do want to. I know why. Because they want to control the data.
Because they want to control the stream of corruption. They know that they've got problems in-house, and they want to be able to control, they want to be able to protect that.
Yes.
Shelter it.
Right. I think you and I are on the same page. I am
think
so.
We are too.
I just see it
as if you spend the million and you've got an independent entity, you'll probably save down the road in the first year or two, you'll save 20 to 50 million in incarceration costs, and that means you get an enormous return on your $1 million investment. It's
I say you spend $1 million buying community members' cameras and having community members film the police, and then you don't have to build an infrastructure to actually deal with it, right? Have community members film the police, have a community drop-off box.
That's not as sure a thing. How are the community members going to be in a parking lot when the two cops are beating them up and then going to falsify the report?
You know, just like the kid in North Portland, there were community members who took the time to use their cell phones, their iPads, and they filmed the cop. And even though it was grainy and even though they weren't professionals, it was very well done enough so that the judge could see that what the police officer scenario was not actually accurate, and therefore that young man is not spending the rest of his life in jail. And
well,
so
he's a lucky boy is all I can say.
He is a lucky young man because the community took pictures.
They always want to control the narrative. And
right.
Why do I have so much cynicism? Because I have a friend who got set up and they destroyed the video. And no one ever can. They even admitted they did, and they still got this friend. He's not doing as heavy a time that he might have.
Well, because they forced him to plead to something lesser.
Yep.
Oh yeah, I know that story well.
They admitted under deposition that somebody destroyed the video. We don't know if it was us, but somebody did.
Oh, yes. Well, thank you. I appreciate you pushing back on me. I appreciate it. Sounds like you and I are pretty much in the same place. It's just that I just don't think I think that we're going to spend $1 million. Let's spend it on cameras for the community. And then we'll be a lot safer. But I thank you. I thank you for challenging me. You have a great day.
Have a good one. Bye.
You too. Bye now. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Hello, Pam. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Joanne. Thank you for an extra wonderful show.
You are very
You're
welcome.
Always great. My concern right now is that I heard a while back that Mayor Hales had interfered, had asked our Speaker of the House to basically block a bill. And it was concerning insurance and Uber insurance of its drivers. And this fries me. I mean, this our legislature does things that affect the whole state.
Yes.
And mayor, one city doesn't have the right to interfere with the whole state. I don't think. I mean, not like that. And I don't know. What do you do? What do we do to get what do they call it? Sunlight.
Yes.
Transparency. And how do we call these people out when we know they've done something? And of course, we're not going to get a yes, I did this or yes, I did that from them. Do you have any suggestions for
that?
Well,
I do think that we do have to call them out. Because if you notice, I don't mind calling the mayor out by name. I don't mind calling the police chief out by name. It's important that the public knows what the people who are in positions to serve us, our public servants, what they're really doing. And if they are misrepresenting information to the public, I think it's a public service to let the public know that that is so. The legislature is a very sleazy process. You know, it's funny. As a former legislator, I can say that. It's a pretty sleazy process because what we see at hearings is really, it's kind of like going to testify at the city council. You think all the people who come in and testify at the city council, that this is where the decision is going to be made.
No, it's made beforehand.
And so as a good community member, you come in, you do your little testimony, and you realize, well, wait a minute. The people who are opposed to this aren't here testifying. Why aren't they here testifying, putting their voice on the record? Well, because they've already had their private meetings with the elected officials. They've already put their opposition on the record, and they did it behind closed doors. So they don't have to come out in public and then publicly display that they're opposed to the legislation.
Or whatever it is,
yeah. Right? And so I just think that the more we call those people out, just like earlier, I was like, well, who are these pretend pro-choice Democrats who won't bring out Senate Bill 894 for a hearing, right? It's like, how do you be pro-choice and then not bring a bill out that protects women's reproductive health, you know, as an example, right?
And
ironically, legislators won't tell you who their legislative colleagues are who aren't doing the right thing behind closed doors.
Well, all I know is that when you hear stuff like this, it makes people lose faith in the idea of having a government.
Yes.
And I mean, totally. And by the way, would you repeat, do you know the website where you can give your opinion about the cops' cameras? Because
Yes, I think it is the Police Bureau's website, but I will pull it up and I will announce it before the end of the program.
Oh, thank you so much. I'll wait for that. Thank you very much.
You are welcome. Bye-bye. Have a great day. Thanks you for too. The call. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. What's on your legislative agenda? Good morning, Jack. Welcome to KBOO.
Yeah, listening to this discussion about cameras, it seems to me there's a tremendous business opportunity here. Personal body cameras for everyone. I mean, and they don't have to, and it wouldn't need to be very expensive at all. So you got your own personal body camera, turn it on and off when you want. If you think that the cops are going to come and harass you, you're in some public place, you're in a park, you're in a mall, you're wherever, and you're worried that there's cops on the beat here and they might start harassing me. So I'm going to turn my camera on, and you could have the data. The thing could be set up so the data is automatically being uploaded to a secure server.
Right.
And if the service is provided by a company that guarantees that the data will not be tampered with, then you've got your own personal record of how the cops interact with you in public if you're worried about it. And I think there's a tremendous bit. I'm surprised this doesn't exist already.
Yeah, I think maybe it does.
Well, I haven't looked into it, but every time you get an idea like this, that's the first thing. Has this been done before?
Right.
Is there a product on the market like this? And it seems to me that with this issue with the police being untrustworthy, unreliable, it should be that someone should have jumped on this by now.
You would think so. What's interesting, I think, about this whole body cam conversation is actually Seattle just recently turned off all their body cams. And you know why they turned them off? Because one community member did a public records request and requested all the video. And they had no system in place to actually say no, right? Because it was a official public records request. And so Seattle PD decided that they would turn off all their cameras. So they are no longer, they now have invested in cameras that are going to be collecting dust. Because that's the challenge, right? Because who gets access to the data is the huge question, right? It's less about the cameras and more about who has access to the data and how is that data used. And the police would prefer us to not have any access to it and not have the data be used for discipline, not have it be used for prosecution, not have it be used to defend community members who've been wrongly charged.
I see. Well, anyway, if we're gonna if the suggestion is for the citizenry to own the surveillance state,
right?
Then we just take possession of. I mean, it's just a matter of commerce, you know. I mean, someone could step in and fill that void.
Well, I mean, I like your idea. The only piece that we haven't quite figured out yet is where's the data repository?
Oh, you put it in the cloud.
Yeah, put it in the cloud. Oh, give it to Google, huh?
Well, I mean, you know, if you've got a company that's offering this service,
right?
And they're selling hardware and software and a service. Okay, I mean, they could probably do it for about what people pay, for their monthly cell phone bills. They guarantee that it's not going to be tampered with and that only you have access to it. It seems like a no-brainer to me. I don't know. I would have thought that somebody, if anyone clever enough to think up Kickstarter, could have done it.
Right.
Yeah, and venture capitalists are everywhere. I mean, there's a lot of money to be made on this one.
Well, I mean, and that's why Taser is trying to sell it to every police department across the country, just like they did with Tasers. Ironically, they've got a plan for how police departments can buy them and actually use them. But thank you. I really appreciate the input. And, you know, there actually are already apps. I know that the ACLU has an app for traffic stops. They have a very cool app. In fact, because once you film the cops, once you stop filming, your phone locks, and so the cops can't get into your phone and actually erase your video. So there are some out there already, but maybe you've sparked some new ideas for other folks. Thank you so much.
I mean, they could take it and smash it, right?
I'm sorry?
Classic, you know, for people videographing demonstrations, for example, the cops just come up and smash the camera. But like I said, the other end of this is if the data is being uploaded immediately, automatically to a secure server, it's then beyond their reach.
Well, that's true, and that's what the ACLU does, actually.
Well, that's tremendous, and I think this is going to grow. I really think that. That it's time to turn the cameras in the other direction.
I absolutely agree with that. I think that the more community members have cameras, the more safer we all are. Thank you.
We all got cell phones, and many of those smartphones do have cameras.
Yes,
and
they do.
An app like you described by ACLU, that's a great thing. And I think that putting those guys under the glass is the way to deal with them.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your call. Yep. Have a great day. And a previous caller had asked about how do you get the feedback from about Portland Police and the cameras. So if you go to Mayor Charlie Hale's website, there is a document. If you scroll down, it has this list of questions about the cameras. And so what the questions are really are related around. So there's a feedback form on the mayor's website. The feedback form says questions to consider. The Portland Police Bureau would like to hear your thoughts about on-body cameras as a tool to enhance community relations, build trust, and enhance officer accountability. Man, the words I was about to say. So here's the questions to consider. Privacy issues that concern you. How to use the technology during sensitive investigations, domestic violence, sexual assault, child abuse, response to care for someone needing mental health assistance. Should footage be available to anyone who asks? This could include victim interviews, interior of homes, children, uninvolved community members, etc. Once footage is released, should there be any restrictions on sharing and posting that video? other thoughts, suggestions, or concerns you may have. I think the way they worded these questions is it's amazing when you word questions because you want to get a certain answer. I think the way these questions are worded is to make you fearful that somehow a child abuse victim, a domestic violence or sexual assault victim, all that information will be made public. And that's exactly the frame they're trying to tell you. If you notice, none of their questions have anything to do with police use of violence against community members. What would our concern be about that? It doesn't talk about prosecuting cops. No questions about, well, who do you prosecute if you see misconduct taking place? And so I think the questions are BS, and they're set up to make you fearful of allowing people to have access to the video. Back to the phone line. Got lots of callers. Hello, John Doe. Can you be short, sweet, to the point, please?
Yeah, I'm being short, sweet. I just feel like the whole body cam, honestly, is bunch of BS because they had cameras and cars already and it didn't make a difference. They like the Oakland shootings and stuff where people have cameras. They like the guy said earlier, all they do is break your camera,
right?
Or they threaten you or tell you they're gonna put you in jail. So the whole body cam issue, it just sounds like just another form of, you know, fear and a reason like, oh well, we need the cops need to have body cams so they can be, you know, protected or, you know, make sure they're doing things right. But they've never been doing things right. So I feel like the cameras is just another way to spend some money, put some money in their pocket, and you know, use things to cover up. And like you guys were saying earlier about the footage going to a database or to an independent entity, eventually that the entity is going to be corrupted anyway, so it really doesn't matter in the long run.
Well,
so
but
to
if
me,
you...
it's just a, BS in the long run.
Well, you know, I share your assessment about that. I think it's a way to pretend that you're actually doing accountability, right?
Real
accountability would mean you fire people who don't follow the Constitution, right?
Thank you. Amen.
That simple. Thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. Have a great day. Coming up on this morning on KBOO at 9 here, Press Watch, host Teresa Mitchell brings you the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, host Pear talks about the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King on April 4th, 1968. We want to thank KBOO members for your generous support. If you missed our last pledge drive, you can still become a member by going to KBOO.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Now, back to the phone line. Hello, Linda. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Yeah, hello. Maybe I'm way too late to the debate, or I don't know what, but it seems like forever we've been trying to get citizen review boards and root out rotten cops.
Right.
I think a certain mentality of people, not all cops are rotten, but some of them are, and some of them are thrill seekers. I had a friend who was willing to be a cop for no pay because she wanted to be a cop so bad, and she thought high-speed chases were exciting and fun, and you see them swoop into, like, a very small incident. I almost got taken out by a cop who was swooping into a 7-Eleven where there was already four cops.
Right.
And I, you know, they're thrill seekers. It's like, what kind of level after level of level do we have to put in to feel safe? And it seems like we need to take the hiring and the discipline and the everything out of the cops' hands.
Yes.
And have it an independent thing totally by citizens.
You are absolutely right. And as you know, the DOJ called out
like a squirrel cage. And what next level do we have to do to feel safe? I mean, it makes me sick to my stomach.
I agree. Thank you for your call. We appreciate
it. Thanks.
Have a great day. And back to the phone line. Hello, Jack. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, Joanne.
Hi.
Following up kind of ties in with what Linda just said. I think the paradigm is about to change. The Twitter has just released their Periscope app. It's live streaming video on your cell phone, which means anybody out there can just put what the police are doing or what they're doing or whatever,
mm-hmm,
live streaming on the net.
Oh, you know, I just was reading about that. Yeah, it's kind of like your own TV show, right?
Yeah, and the thing is, once it's up there in the cloud, I mean, servers save all of this stuff. So once it's up there, it isn't going away, which means I think the whole paradigm's going to change. I don't think we would need to have the police with their own cams, because everybody's going to have them.
Well, thank you for that. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I had actually forgotten. I'd read that earlier this week, that there was this new... Did you say it's Twitter?
Yes, Twitter.
So Twitter, you can now do like live stream.
The app is called Periscope.
Periscope. Well, thank you very much. I think, maybe that will be a game changer for us. And we need, what I love is that community is becoming much more educated about traffic stops and how to respond at traffic stops. In my neighborhood, we've trained our community to come out and watch the cops. And so it's and take pictures and bring their cell phone and bring their family out and watch when cops are stopping people. That is what makes the community safe. The more eyes that are on the police, the better and safer the community and the cops are, quite frankly, right? When the community has cameras, cops react differently.
And I think the bad guys have to watch out, too, because now they can be on live streaming video, too.
Exactly right. Yeah, can you imagine, right? It's like it would be a lot easier to find somebody who committed a crime, huh?
Yeah, you betcha.
Thank you so much. Appreciate the call.
You bet.
Have a great day.
You too.
And we've got a couple more calls we're going to squeak in. Hello, Joe. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning. I just want to remind everybody who is ever, whenever there is a incident where the police are arresting somebody or doing their normal police work, and you find it in your mind that you should videotape what's going on, whether you're using a cell phone camera or any other device with a camera on it, stay back so they can't say, stay back far enough away where they can't say you were interfering.
Absolutely right.
Preferably do it where they don't even know you're filming them.
Well, I don't know. I like to let them know I'm filming them. I actually get out and make a big production of taking pictures, of standing close by.
Well, there was an incident
by.
A couple years ago down here in Beaverton at the Beaverton Valley Bowling Lanes, and some guy videotaped his buddy was in a fight with some other guy. Some guy was beating up his buddy, and then the cops came, and he was back like, 100 feet away, you know?
Right, right.
And I remember watching this thing because it went around and around on the 6 o'clock news on the local noise television shows here. And it took him almost 2 years, I think, to get his phone back.
Oh, I remember that. I guess it was a camera, I think. But I remember that case.
It might have been a camera, but it might have been also a cell phone with a camera in it. I can't remember.
Right.
The point of it is that they kept that for a long time. And I think he was missing some of the stuff that he got back. And what I'd like to see on the cops, if the cops are going to wear cameras, that they just have the kind that where you would have a little micro SD card in it. And, I think you can get like a 64 or 128. And I don't know how many hours that would run. I think depending on what film quality or what video quality that they were running, if they were just running standard video quality, one of those little chips should do more than a week's worth of, 40 hours worth of camera work. And they, you said earlier, I think if they're going to have them on, they should have them on the whole shift. From the time they walk out of the police station and they hop in their car, that thing should be on.
I absolutely agree. Thank you so much for your call.
And thank you for your work. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Have a great day. And we're going to squeak this last one in if we can get them in 30 seconds or less. Hey, Maria, can we do 30 seconds or less, please?
Tell me how I find out what the legislature is considering. What's the website I go to find out? I didn't know there was a place where you could just find out what they're working on.
Go to Oregon State Legislature, put that in your search engine. It will pull up all the hearings that are happening today. The easiest way is to contact your legislators and tell them what you're interested in and have them track those bills for you.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate the call. Well, this has been a good day. We've had lots of conversations, much more about body cams than I thought we would have. But I'm glad that we're having this conversation. Please keep your eyes out for legislation coming from Salem. We cannot afford to close off public access to information if we're going to hold police accountable. The public needs information in order to do that. And so I want to thank you very much for being here with me today. I certainly look forward to being back next week. I am Joanne Hardesty. This has been Voices from the Edge. And we will see you next week at the same time, at the same place, on the same station. I'm pretty sure that's so.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. No, you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that Peter is cold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on,
get up, stand up.
Hey, good morning. Get up. It is a couple minutes in front of 9 o'clock, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. Your Thursday morning in progress, and coming your way in a half hour, join Per Fogering for Fight the Empire, today talking about the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on April 4th. 1968 was when that happened. Now, since 68, the U.S. has been involved in one disastrous war after another. Is America under a curse? We'll find out at 9:30. At 10 o'clock, it's Air Cascadia. Headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, former CIA analyst Ray McGovern talks about the nuclear talks with Iran and why Iran distrusts the U.S. Also, did Jerry Brown's executive order for mandatory water restrictions in California let corporate agriculture and oil companies off the hook? And part three of the series, The Battle for Education in the 21st Century. At 11 on Between the Covers, Sarah Manguso discusses her third book, Ongoingness, The End of a Diary, and how maintaining a diary became a kind of spiritual practice. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, author Debrina Jackson Gandhi discusses her newest book, The Love Lies, and her work as a transformational speaker, mentor, and personal success coach. That is all coming up right after we hear from Teresa Mitchell, hosting Press Watch, and the news you're not supposed to know, next on KBOO.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the 4th Annual Umbrella Festival of Circus and Comedy, April 2nd to April 5th at the Alberta Rose Theatre. 4 nights of entertainment, including outsider music legend Artist the Spoon Man, 9 traveling circus troupes, acrobats and aerialists, clowns and cabaret, bands and burlesque, drag and daring do, and more. Again, that's the 4th Annual Umbrella Festival of Circus and Comedy, April 2nd through April 5th at the Alberta.